Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic, but today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and this is 3 Yards Per Carry. I've been saying we're on all week since I've been doing all these camp reports, but this is 3 Yards Per Carry. Everybody's been asking, okay, you know, we like listening to you, but we want to hear the other two guys, all right? Especially since something happened this past weekend. But as always, it's been 5 years with these guys, and they're back, and they're starting with us again for the football season. That's Prize Picks. Use the promo code 3 yards. That's the number 3 yards. You deposit $100, you get $100. It's as simple as that. BetterEdge.com. Go to BetterEdge.com/5reasons, and you get $20 just for signing up. As always, you can find us and you can find some of our work on our Discord, or you could just talk to us on our Discord at discord.gg/onlyfins. You become a member there for $3 a month. And we're not done with the plugs. We have a store. So you could go buy all our designs. Go to onlyfins.printify.me/products. Or just go to our 3 Yards Per Carry Twitter account. All the details there are in the pinned tweet. I'm talking too much into microphones for the past 2 weeks. So check that out. Buy a lot of stuff. Buy everything on the menu. Okay. All right, guys. It finally happened. It wasn't $55 million, but it was $53.1 per year. But that's not what matters. What matters is that Tua's in the fold and it's $167 million guaranteed. The deal will be kind of team friendly at first. It keeps them roughly around that 20% mark of the cap, which is the magic number, which will keep them somewhere around ranked eighth, highest cap charge in the NFL, and soon to drop once a couple more deals come in. Simon, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's a good deal. You know, we heard it all summer, all spring. You know, the market is the market, and the market paid what the market decided, essentially, you know, and he deserves it to a degree. You know, I still, I still do have some questions, as I think we probably all do, in terms of, 1-6 record against winning teams last season was a disappointment. Hasn't won a playoff game, 7 total wins in 4 years against teams with a winning record. But, he's done an awfully good job the last couple of years, stayed healthy last year. We know. I think the deal is structured pretty well in terms of, we could potentially move on after the 2026 season if it doesn't work out, if he gets injured, whatever. And the structure, I think, allows for some fairly significant savings and fairly manageable dead cap hits, which start in 2027, I think, if I remember rightly. And I think if you released or traded to after June 1st, 2027, then you just incur an 11.4 million dead cap hit, but save 34 million in cap space. Now, we all hope that doesn't come to it, because we hope that he takes us to the promised land. And certainly, the Dolphins have shown an awful lot of faith, and I think a lot of work was done behind the scenes. I spoke to somebody within the Dolphins, obviously on the condition of anonymity, the other day, but Mike McDaniel did do an awful lot of work, and I think there's been a fair bit about the fact that he went to see Steve Ross. And he got things moving at a very, very critical juncture last week, a very, very critical juncture in terms of just giving that final push. But I think also, I would certainly take into consideration, I think this is an educated guess, but I would take into consider a very educated guess. I would take into consideration the fact that a lot of the senior players on the Dolphins team held quite a lot of sway, quite a lot of influence. Their words to the media, their words privately, their words to coaches, their words to agents, which got fed back and get fed back, as these things invariably do, that they carried some water in terms of how they felt, not just about Tua the player, but Tua the person. They understand that it was a business, and that's what we hear all the time from players. But my impression from the conversation I had was that, there was a wield of influence from senior players who were pushing pretty hard behind the scenes, and making it known that, in many ways it was almost beyond the business at some point. And I think there were certain players that really did push very hard, and they wanted to see the guy get his just desserts, and for him to get paid. And I don't think there were too many more. We talk about how the majority of the fan base was happy when Tua got his deal, Chris, but I know for a fact that there were an awful lot of players on that roster who are thrilled, not just because it took away the distraction, but because they believe he was ultimately deserving. Does he need to make a step forwards? Yes, he does. Does he need to, Jalen Ramsey gave this 10-minute speech, either today or yesterday, where he talked about, the onus is upon the players in that locker room to get rid of that reputation that they have, that they're not tough, that they can't win on the road, they can't win in cold weather, they can't win big games. And a lot of that falls onto his shoulders, rightly or wrongly. And we need to see that now over the next couple of years for him to justify that contract. And the level that he's got to now is great. And the level that he's been at the last couple of years is great, injuries notwithstanding. But now we need to see him take the next step. Now we need to see him take the to justify that contract. And that's the same for all the quarterbacks that have been paid this summer and in the last 18 months, whether that's Joe Burrow, who's already been to a Super Bowl, whether that's Jalen Hurts, who's been to a Super Bowl. But now there's an onus of responsibility onto Trevor Lawrence, who has underperformed, to Jordan Love, who has the big upside, albeit in a smaller window of sample size. And for Tua, who led the league in passing last year, but now can he flip that on his head in terms of games against teams with winning records? And that's really important moving forward. So, yeah, I think it's a good deal. I'm glad it's got done. I'm glad it's out of the way. It's not running over the, over through the summer. It's not a distraction. And now they can focus on the really important things, like getting this offense humming and making sure that we are in a position to win playoff games, and hopefully multiple playoff games, and take this team where all of us as a fan base wants to go to, Chris.
Yeah, and but
Yeah, I
before
think
Chris gets
I'll...
before Chris gets going, you mentioned Stephen Ross. He was at camp today for the first time all summer, and he was engaged in a very long conversation with Jalen Phillips and Chris Greer. So I'm not rumor mongering here. It's just they had about a 30-minute conversation.
Now he's the next man, he's the next cab off the rank in terms of payment.
Probably.
I think it's
Well, him
kind
and
of
Holland.
impossible for Jalen Phillips to get anything done at this juncture with them just because of his coming off the Achilles. And that goes both ways. That's not just on the team being unsure about Jalen Phillips. That's also Jalen Phillips saying, I don't want to sign at a discount when I could when I can bet on myself and get the contract that I know I can get, you know? So that's going to be something I think gets put off into the future. But the Tua deal, I think that what you said, Simon, about the players and they have been publicly saying things about this for a little while now. It kind of just highlights how, when it comes to the quarterback position, I'm sorry, but you've really got to set aside your quantitative modeling when it comes to the quarterback position. And this is in multiple ways. It's not just about the contract. It's also drafting quarterbacks. You know, how many times do you hear, about the quarterback class that, oh, so and so is drafted too high. Oh, he really should have been a second round pick. Oh, that sort of thing. And it's sort of the position is so exogenous to the rest of NFL football, that I think that it's very hard to slot it quantitatively into a smooth ordering of draft rankings, or a smooth ordering of compensation and pay scales. It's not a quantitative position. But you've got to assign a quantitative number to it at the end of the day, and I understand that. But the important thing is, and the battle back and forth was about really about making Tua and making the players around him, everybody happy and certain about what the plan is going forward, because that's how you win, you know? And so if you kept on with this, with what could have been a pissing match between the quarterback and the team, then you have really the opposite of that. You have an unhappy quarterback and a bunch of uncertainty of the players around him, and that's not a great way to go forward and try to win it all and have that magical Cinderella season that everybody dreams of having. So at some point, I think the numbers are good. I don't think they're particularly all that interesting, to be honest. That it came all the way down to this. It's a $53.1 million per year pay scale. I try and admonish people to be wary of folks who try and drill that down to one magical number and say, well, this is the real contract, or this is the real, it's not like that. This is the pay scale. He is guaranteed the next 3 years against contract termination, I would say. So for the next 3 years, he's going to be on this contract, and like it whether you like it or not. Now, that doesn't mean he couldn't be traded, and a lot of people don't really consider that possibility. They don't really consider the contract structure and what it means for the ability to trade a player. But I think that that's what this contract is. That this is the pay scale, as to it, once said, the market is the market. And the guaranteed amount of guaranteed money pretty much just guarantees that he probably gets to be on this contract for about at least 3 of the 5 years, without fear or too much fear of termination. So it's good to make the player happy. It's good for in the short run for those of us that really think that the window is now, really think the window is 2024, maybe 2025. Then this is what you are looking for. You want the good vibes. You want everybody to be certain. You want everybody to be happy and to have that singular focus, and not be distracted. And for those of us who were a little wary of Tua's injury history, the concussions, some of us that probably, or some of us that still don't believe in the talent, really. Those people, I think, are more worried about 2026 and beyond. And so we'll see when we get there. And I will say this, just from getting through the contract, while it is true the earliest that the Dolphins could terminate the contract if they needed to for whatever reason, something happens, and they decide that that needs to happen. That would probably not be until the off season of the before the 2027 season. However, that doesn't mean that he couldn't be traded in short order. Like, next year, if the completely unthinkable happens and Patrick Mahomes is like, hey, I actually want to be a Miami Dolphin, and he's trying to forces himself into Miami the way that Deshaun Watson tried to force himself into Miami a few years back. Then, as long as Tua is still regarded as a starter, then the Dolphins, this is a tradable contract. People often confuse guaranteed money with paid money. The only paid money is the signing bonus, which is $42 million, and the salary, which is another $1.1 million. So he will collect $43 million from the Dolphins this year. And if Patrick Mahomes decides that he wants to be a Miami Dolphin next year, you could trade the rest of the contract, and be no worse for the wear. I mean, people don't really realize that that is a that is a possibility. When it comes to that sort of thing, we talked about it, kind of batted around more in a bemused fashion than anything when Jim Harbaugh took over the Chargers, and we're like, does he really have it? Does he really have a thing for JJ McCarthy? Well, I mean, if he does, then the Chargers haven't paid those option bonuses yet, or at least there was a point in the offseason after the hiring of Jim Harbaugh when, they had yet to actually literally put that money into the bank account of Justin Herbert. And so yeah, they could have gotten a king's ransom for him and gone with the JJ McCarthy if there wasn't a no trade clause. And we have no idea what the no trade clause situation is with the Miami Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa on this contract. But I, it that's what I'm talking about is those cash flows. As long as you haven't paid the money yet, then whoever you trade him to is the one that takes on those obligations, guaranteed or not guaranteed. It doesn't matter. So I think that yes, there are built-in outs if you're one of those doomsdayers and you just never bought in and you believe that the worst is going to happen. Yeah, there are outs, but in reality, the Dolphins aren't thinking that way. They just want this to be done. Tua Tagovailoa wants this to be done. Every player around Tua wants this to be done, and they all voiced exactly that, and that's why it finally came to happen. Now, the one thing I will say though is that, while some might blame Chris Greer for the way this got started off on maybe the wrong foot or maybe bruised some egos, I've been told several times by several different sources that the beginning of this process was kind of rocky. And while Chris Greer will take the blame for that, and he will probably fall on the sword for that, it was a group effort. So we can talk about, Mike McDaniel stepping in and going to bat for Tua, but but he was party to the process from the beginning, including the very rocky beginnings. So all's well that ends well. I'm glad the player is happy. I'm glad this is over and we don't have to argue about it anymore. And now that everybody can just get ready and have that singular focus, that singular mindset toward the championship.
Yeah, I find it interesting also that when they announced the deal and and they did the presser. First of all, Tua looks absolutely fabulous physically. He looks completely different than he did last year, where, quite frankly, he was a bit chubby, and his previous 2 years where he was a little thinner. He's more barrel chested, more full, bigger. He has more of a man body, I would say. He's growing into his man body at the age of 26. So he looks a lot better physically. But I also found it interesting that they made a big show of having Brandon Shore, Chris Greer, the whole gang was there. Even Bevel was carrying baby Maisie. Ace was running around the stage. Chris Greer was there. The whole gang was there. Frank Smith, Mike McDaniel. So, that they're making a statement with this, and they want this to work out. They've made every effort to make this work out. One last thing on the Tua deal. Simon, did you find it, I wouldn't say odd, but interesting that they kind of coordinated the two deals, Tua and Jordan Love? And if you break it down dollar for dollar, with the Wisconsin state taxes, they're essentially going to make the same amount. Like, let's say we start from zero today. They're essentially going to make the same amount of money if they gain every single dollar for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I thought both obviously done by Athletes First as well, in terms of those deals, and I thought it was interesting that they, David Mulugeta, made the decision. I assume made the decision or was part of the decision to allow Tua to have his moment in the sun, early through the day US time, and then the Love deal obviously came out late at night, and so that both deals, I suppose, in a way, could be celebrated, and they could maximize the news and radio and podcast kind of outlets as much as possible individually. Just your point there about Frank Smith and Mike McDaniel and all those people being there. I think it's probably apposite to mention as well that this is huge for those offensive minds, but also probably huge for Chris Greer because their futures are very much now more than ever now that they've chosen to pay what they've chosen to pay. Their futures are now extremely tied into whatever Tua does. If Tua succeeds and the Dolphins win a Super Bowl, then they are made men forever. And if he doesn't, if he flops, if he gets hurt, if he doesn't live up to the price tag now, and it is a big price tag, then their jobs are also on the line. And I think they know that, and we know that, and they're all in this boat. The boat got smaller, or maybe the boat got bigger, but now they're on a boat, and a very specific boat, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out because lots of people's futures are on the line here. And you talk about we've sort of looked at the when is the out of the deal and when could they trade him and when could they and Chris made a very fair point, which was the Dolphins aren't looking at that, and they're not. They're obviously not. You don't just pay a man, £53.1 million a year, dollars per year, if you're suddenly thinking, well, when can we get out of it? When can we? But it will have, that is part of the deal. That's why a few noses got bloody along the way, because they remain internally, and I know this as fact, they remain internally question marks about his long-term health. And one healthy season in 7 years, that it's a business. That is the bottom of bottom lines. No matter how much we love the guy, the bottom of bottom lines is it had to remain a business, and that's why a few noses got bloody. But like you say, it's good that it's done, it's out of the way, and now we can focus on the actually important business.
All right. One last thing before we go to, and I'd like you both to comment on this before we go to break. Athletes First has one more client, Dak Prescott. I fear that they might do something really stupid in Dallas, and he'll end up with the Jets if the Jets have a bad season this year. What in the hell are the Cowboys doing? Because they're planning on paying CeeDee Lamb the largest, richest contract given to a wide receiver ever. But they still don't have their quarterback squared away. And Dak can actually say, no, I'm walking at season's end. What in the hell are they doing? First Simon and then Chris. Simon?
I think Dak's gone. I think they'll end up working out a deal for him, as in a trade deal, and try and get the most for him. CeeDee Lamb, obviously a top three, top four receiver in this league, but they've clearly made that decision. They don't want to pay Dak, whether that's an age thing, whether that's an injury thing, whether or not, look, when was the last time the Cowboys were in a Super Bowl? I mean, that was the Troy Aikman
30
NFC.
years. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and there have been consistent over the last 10, 15 years, consistent. Especially home defeats in the playoffs. You go back to the, getting knocked out by Green Bay on that miracle throw to Mercedes Lewis, and the field goals at the end of games, and the Cowboys just getting bounced out, and the weird sort of no snap with no offensive lineman in San Francisco a couple of years, and Dak's been at the helm of that. And again, rightly or wrongly, quarterback wins is a terrible thing to judge a quarterback on, but maybe they've just made a decision that financially, long term, that just doesn't make sense for them. And maybe they're looking at, I mean, maybe they're looking at a Quinn Ewers, maybe they're looking at an Arch Manning in a couple of years. Who knows what they're looking at? But you know what Jerry Jones is like. He's like Steve Ross. He's not getting any younger. And it's been 30 years since they've been to the Super Bowl. Maybe they just don't feel like Dak Prescott can take them to the promised land. And CeeDee Lamb could help a new quarterback coming in. And it's fascinating to see what will happen. But I just think Dak will be gone.
Chris?
I think that when he does sign, he's one of the quarterbacks that will, we talk about what is fair for Tua, and especially given The fact that NFL executives kind of weighed in through surveys like Jeremy Fowler's and say that Tua, is kind of an honorable mention type, 11 through 15 type of quarterback. What is his fair value? I think that we circle back. I originally said when we circle back in 2 years, Tua's probably ranked quarterback contract ranking will be somewhere around, ninth or 10th. I'm going to revise that and say that might actually be the case within 1 year, because of the way that I anticipate that players are going to ask for their contracts to be addressed, and for the various guys that have contracts coming up to get that addressed. And Dak Prescott is one of those. And I agree with Simon that you don't go to the brink like this with Dak, unless you're pretty much prepared to trade him away and lose him. And I do think that there are egos involved, no shortage of them in Dallas, starting from the top with Jerry Jones. And they traded for Trey Lance, and they might be just thinking that this is more about creating a quarterback than about the guy being the guy and holding them hostage. So we're going to see how that actually goes. But once they probably will end up trading Dak Prescott, but he will end up getting a contract that probably slots above Tua, as will several other quarterbacks. And then before we know it, we turn around and Tua's contract actually kind of looks like a bargain within the next 2 years. I anticipate. So I think that he's part of that. And I don't know if it's going to be the Jets or what. I'm very, that I'm very wary of that situation. From a personality standpoint, with the Jets and all those big personalities, all those volatile personalities that they have down there, how that's going to go, especially if they start going through some early season losses and some early season troubles, I think that that's really on the brink of self-destruction, if they really get tested. So we'll see what kind of stuff they're made of this year.
I think it's worth remembering as well, Alf, that the who Mike McCarthy there is as on the hot seat as any coach in the NFL. And there's potentially a prospect where they think, if they flame out in the playoffs again, or they don't even make the playoffs, and quite frankly, anything less than an NFC Championship game probably would see the end of Mike McCarthy, I would suspect. And I think there's got to have been a conversation between Stephen Jones and Jerry Jones, and the guys there, that would they want to necessarily saddle a new head coach with an aging, he's not super old, Dak Prescott, but he's probably entering the autumn of his career, a getting older quarterback who has consistently proven that he's not able to carry a team deep into the playoffs, with a contract in the same ballpark as all the contracts that we're looking at now. Because, mark my words, Dak Prescott will want to be paid the same as or more than guys that have not been or done anything in the playoffs. Tua, Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence. And I suspect that at some point, if he has another really good season, there's going to be a Brock Purdy contract that comes down the line. There's going to be all sorts of, things. And I just wonder whether the Joneses have had a conversation to say, look, we just don't want to saddle a new head coach, if it does all go tits up, with a guy that maybe we don't trust anyway. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out in Dallas. But I think there could be awfully big changes, both essentially the two most important positions, which are head coach and quarterback. And I, for one, would be, fairly surprised if both McCarthy and Prescott are with the members of the Dallas Cowboys next season.
A hot seat coach matching up with a hot seat quarterback, essentially,
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
Kind of double tipping there, isn't it?
when Dak signed that last contract, it was genius because he actually made himself a legitimate free agent because there is no tag. You can't tag him. He has a no tag clause, essentially. So, well, that's enough Dak Prescott and Tua talk for one half of this show. We're gonna go to break now. And when we come back, Simon will bring us in and we'll talk training camp. It's been six practices so far. Pretty eventful. Some good, some very bad. But first, these words.
Let me tell you about Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sport. All you do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. Sign up today and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss this deal on Prize Picks because it's gone when September ends. Football is on the way, so do as I do and make Monday and Thursday night football more interesting. Download the Prize Picks app today and use the promo code 3YARDS. That's the number 3YARDS and get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's the code 3YARDS on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys. How's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. So if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's HIMS.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. HIMS.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free.
Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that business homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or, do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at WCUFL.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 five-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
Welcome back to 3 Yards Per Carry. Alf has obviously been at training camp for the first 6 days, and you would know this if you're a member of OnlyFins, because every day Alf gives us, as consumers on there, on that platform, a pretty solid rundown of what's happening, you know, how the plays shake out and who does what, etc., etc., etc. So you can join OnlyFins by signing up to our Discord. Alf, what are the details?
discord.gg/OnlyFins. $3 a month.
I mean, that is a pretty good deal. So you've been there, Alf. What overall, first of all, are your kind of main takeaways of the first 6 days of training camp before we sort of dig into the weeds?
Okay, first the bad. None of our centers can snap the ball correctly. Okay.
This Aaron is a concern. I just want to pick up on this point, because I've seen people talk about, oh, it's not a concern. I've seen people talk about it is a concern. And I was talking to somebody in the Dolphins front office the other day who, I have to be quite careful what I say here, who elicited some concerns about how it's been going as a holdover from the spring as well, in terms of, you know, yes, it's a new offense, it's new timing, it's a new quarterback, it's a left-handed quarterback, so hands are in a different place. Feel, all of those sorts of things, motions, line court, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot that goes into it, obviously, as we know, and some things that we don't know. But, you know, some concern has been expressed about, you know, why is this still an issue now on day six? And it's not just day six of training camp. It's, you know, the team, the players have been together snapping the ball for, you know, a fairly long time now, if you take into consideration mini camps, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there are some concerns, but let's not, you know, let's not get too ahead of ourselves. It is July 31st here in the UK, because it's gone midnight, but it's, you know, it's a different time. It's the back end of July. We've still got, you know, a month and 6 weeks, I suppose, until the season starts. So a lot of time to iron this out. But there are some, you know, some minor worries that this is still an issue. That's what I would say.
Well, here's the good news. The good news is that between Tua Tagovailoa and Aaron Brewer, all those shotgun snaps are perfect. They seem to botch one out of every three under the center snap. And Teron Armstead was very forthcoming today. And he was saying, look, all these guys, you know, they have a different snap point. You got to get used to it. And Tua might have to crouch down and might have to reach for it, because Aaron Brewer might have a different style than what Connor had. So maybe he was giving us a preview of what they're thinking, but it was a thing. It was like one out of every three snaps under center between Brewer and Tua was going haywire. And then Jack Driscoll sent one over Skylar Thompson's head, and then Ireland Brown sent one over Mike White's head. And then I was thinking, you know what, this Andrew Meyer kid, you know, he looks pretty good. He had a couple of nice practices. You know, he's not playing against ones, spoiler alert, but he looked pretty good. And then he lines up, and then he sends one into the stratosphere with Mike White back there. And at one point in today's practice actually was the one where we nailed the, what do we call it? That's a superfecta, okay? Because Aaron Brewer had a bad snap, Jack Driscoll had a bad snap, Andrew Meyer had a bad snap, and Ireland Brown had a bad snap. That's four centers, four bad snaps.
One, you know, bad. It's good. It's encouraging to know that they're all equally bad at this. but I'm being facetious. I think what is encouraging that I hear from you, Alf, is that when it comes to the starter, Aaron Brewer, that this isn't a shotgun snap issue. This is clearly a new center quarterback exchange issue. And the thing that comes to mind is all the time that during, you know, like it or not, Tua did miss some time this offseason. That he was at times in the building and working out, but not necessarily on the field. There were times that he was on the field, not necessarily doing this or that. There was kind of hold in activity. And so that's probably exacerbating the getting used to one another that needs to happen between a new center and a new quarterback. So I hate to be part of the patience brigade here, as Omar Kelly used to call, you know, the Ryan Tannehill stands. But you know that this is, as Simon said, this is late July, and as for the other guys, the thing to keep in mind is Jack Driscoll. This is the first time he's really even played center since the Senior Bowl. I think I saw him take some snaps during practices on the video. I remember I had access to the All-22 at that point. And he took some snaps at center from at Senior Bowl practices, but I don't think he's ever done it any other time. And so this is a Liam Eichenberg situation where they suddenly throw a guy in there, and so you're going to get what you're going to get when you do that. And the Dolphins really do play with fire this way, and I don't know why. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just something that they do. And then otherwise, you've got two UDFA rookies in Ireland Brown and Andrew Meyer. And that's sort of, well, you're going to get what you get with them, too. So I think that's what stands out about the bulk of the position. But, you know, hearing from you, Alf, that it's not necessarily a shotgun thing with Aaron Brewer, I'll at least take a little bit of solace in that.
Yeah, Teron Armstead, I asked if it could have been the timing, the orchestration. Like, there's so much going on. Tua sending this guy in motion, and then there's the exit motion, then a reset, and then, okay, now we're going to, you know, move a guy from the slot into the backfield. All these moving parts, and maybe Aaron Brewer's getting a little impatient and snaps it incorrectly, and then all of a sudden all the orchestration is gone, and that's why the ball is falling on the floor. And evidently, my explanation is a bit too complicated, because Teron Armstead essentially said, no, Tua has to crouch down and reach for the ball a little bit more. Aaron Brewer is the smaller guy. Okay? So it has nothing to do with all the moving parts of the offense and the timing being off, you know? But, you know, I'll give you some of the really, really good. Yeah, and I've been singing the praises all training camp. He's been really good. Quentin Bell has been really good. But Chop Robinson, they can't block him. Okay, Keon Smith has no hope against him. He's beaten Kendall Lamb. He spent a whole practice getting defeated by Austin Jackson, then set him up with an inside move, and got right in on Tua. He's been a terror, and I've given him the player of the practice twice out of six practices. And, you know, there was a national type that was talking about, you know, if they have to count on him, he's very, very raw. Well, I'll tell you what isn't raw. When you line up to play football and you ask a guy to just run really, really fast past the tackle, guys can usually do that and affect football games. You know, Simon, I know you're driving here, but I wanted to ask you one thing on Chop Robinson. As we go back, because you and me were on the same boat, Chris might end up being right on this one. We were in the same boat. What did we see in the draft run-up to the draft that was turning us off to Chop as an NFL prospect, but we kind of glossed over his very obvious physical skills, which are obviously going to translate at this level, because athletes are athletes.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I liked him as a prospect. I didn't love him as a prospect. I just felt he was a bit too inconsistent for me, and was more of a sub-package player. And I don't think, and again, from talking to some people, I don't believe that sub-package thing has necessarily gone away. And I know that there's been some, excuse me, I know there's been some, you know, he's been a little less secure in some of the run plays, especially when they've been running straight at him. But you know, he's clearly done a very good job in pass rush, and that was never the issue. I think the biggest concern was whether or not he could ramp up that level of consistency and do that, you know, be a threat down in, down out. And I suspect what you'll end up seeing, although I don't think it'll be to the extreme numbers that we saw with the guy I'm going to talk about, but I suspect there will be an element of Alden Smith in terms of the impact that Robinson has early on. And I think he'll probably be forced to play a little bit more maybe on first and second down than perhaps Anthony Weaver and Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer would maybe have him play, because of the slower than hope, not slower than hope, but just the general return from very serious movement injuries that Phillips and Chubb have. But I do think as a, you know, as a sub package pass rusher and as a, you know, a guy that you can line up all over, I think he will cause chaos, and I think he'll get sacks, and I think he'll create sacks. And I think he'll be a very difficult guy to block, as certainly our backups have found out. One question I wanted to ask you actually, Alf, was, you know, and it was going to be Robinson, but actually what's the state of play with Patrick Paul in terms of, and everybody said how amazing he looks in terms of pads and the face mask has got everybody, you know, fired up in terms of how he looks, you know, kind of giving off that sort of Bane vibes. But you know, I had significant concerns, and Chris had significant concerns, and you had significant concerns about his tape coming out of Houston. What have you seen? You know, Mike McDaniel was very, you know, was very pointed in the post draft press conferences, saying that he was going to go into the lab with Butch Barry. What have you seen in the first 6 days and the early showings of Patrick Paul that either continue those concerns or make you think actually, you know, there's hope here?
While Austin Jackson is the only one that can claim to have consistent success against Chop Robinson, although he did get beat, Patrick Paul is the other guy that can claim he's had, you know, some good days against Chop Robinson, although he does get beat. One thing is obviously clear. It was really obvious when you see him out there. He's giant. And there's no referees out there. So I want to make that clear. Referees arrive on Saturday, and they'll be in camp through the Atlanta joint practices and then through the Commanders joint practices. So maybe, you know, some of these holding penalties are going to get called. But one thing is evident right away. Chop has issues converting speed to power with Patrick Paul because he is just so big. And he absorbs the blow, doesn't essentially go anywhere, and kind of stones him, you know, holds him up. So as far as a pass protector against smaller speed types, Patrick Paul gets his hands on them and the rush is over. Now, yeah, as far as in run blocking, it's still a work in progress. He has issues getting to landmarks. That's going to come with practice. He's not Kendall Lamb. He's not Teron Armstead. But he's had his moments in pass pro so far.
I suppose the bigger question is, having spent 2 days watching Tyler Guyton absolutely stone Micah Parsons for the Cowboys at left tackle, is, you know, are we getting, you know, when Teron Armstead finally calls it a day, whether that's the end of this season or next season or whether injuries get, you know, does it feel to you, does it look to you like we might have a guy who might be able to step in a year's time and be the answer at left tackle, given especially, you know, the injuries that, you know, protecting any quarterback is obviously vital, but you always get the sense that maybe not from Chris Greer, but protecting the quarterback almost feels like an extra special duty because of what Tua has been through. So do you feel like we've got a guy?
Yeah, I think optimism is warranted in this case, especially as a pass protector. And you also had that play today, and I made fun of it because it was kind of funny watching it, because you see one giant guy throwing a little guy. But, Jalen Wright gets a block on Kader Kohu. They start jostling and fight breaks out. And here comes Patrick Paul, grabs Kader Kohu and essentially just throws him about 6 or 7 yards and starts a bigger melee. You kind of want to see some of that. You kind of want to see a guy, especially a rookie, take a little bit of ownership and stick up for his guy. So he's had good moments. I still believe this is a redshirt year for him. If Teron Armstead could manage to play 10, 11, 12 games, that would be great, because I think that's what they want for this offense. They want Patrick Paul to just sit behind these guys and learn and, you know, rely on Kendall Lamb, who looks pretty good physically in camp. And he's a great talker, by the way. So they're pretty deep outside. They're thin inside. But Patrick Paul, yeah, there's plenty of, you know, plenty of reason for optimism so far. Plenty of reason.
You buying shares in Patrick Paul, Chris?
Well, actually, what I would want to know is, okay, because we all saw Patrick Paul over the course of a number of years in college maintain this very odd, to put it nicely, way of playing. And, you know, and I'm talking about in terms of his hand placement and his general way that he almost seems to intentionally use his chest, and doesn't use his hands like a professional tackle should, or at least the way that we think a professional tackle should. Granted, we are not coaches. You know, he keeps his hands very wide apart, and he sort of grabs up top and around by the shoulders, and you know he's not keeping those hands inside when he's playing and when he's in his kick step. We knew that coming out, either this was something that, you know, coaches had been trying to drill into his head for years and years. Any competent coach would be trying to drill into his head for years, and he's just not getting it, or he is the victim of somebody who had a very unorthodox way of coaching the position. And so now it's about fixing that. I guess the question is, and I can't wait to see myself in the preseason games, is he nibbling at the edges of his technique, or are you seeing a wholesale revamp of his hand technique, of the way that he uses his chest, of the way that he separates his hands? Is that what we're seeing, or are we seeing sort of, you know, nibbling at the edges, trying to get a little bit better, in kind of nuanced ways? Are we seeing wholesale, or are we seeing nuance?
I think it's wholesale. One thing I saw from him at Houston was his, I don't know what you would call it, but his penchant for wanting to essentially hug guys that would rush them square to the numbers. And, you know, if you don't get called for it, that's awesome, because you're essentially going to stop a rush. But you get called for that 9 out of 10 times in the NFL. I do see him make a conscious effort to keep his hands inside and keep his lead hand on the right shoulder. And him and Bayram Matos keep getting constant, and I mean constant, from Butch Berry instruction. And today was from Teron Armstead as well. And they're being watched constantly on each play. One thing I found interesting as well, and I think I can reveal this, although, you know, I don't think the NFL or the Dolphins are going to get upset about this. Patrick Paul tends to have a lot of his reps one-on-one. And on other occasions, I mentioned the other day, Chop Robinson was facing double teams of Durham Smythe and Alec Ingold. So they seem to be putting a lot on his plate so they could get the instruction up. It seems to be a wholesale effort. It seems to be a complete team effort from Butch Berry, Mike McDaniel, Frank Smith is also very much involved, and Teron Armstead as well, especially Teron Armstead today. It was weird because he was in pads. He did no practicing, but he was doing all the coaching in pads and a helmet, so which was odd to watch. But he's getting special instruction. Him and Bayram Matos, by the way, and I got to say about Bayram Matos, he looks like $1 million. Like, physical, I had no freak idea that guy looked like that.
Absolute freak.
Yeah. You know?
Absolute freak.
But I will say this. Well, he just does not look like he knows what he's doing. But
yeah,
it's to be
unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
But bringing it just back to Chop Robinson, Patrick Paul, those two as a pair, the amount of polish or not polish that the two have, very arguable one way or another. I think that there were definitely scouts that saw a lot of versatility in Chop's game. Particularly, he can move to either side and rush the passer. He could also rush up the middle, which is something I know the Dolphins are going to play with. The nature of the position, it's good to keep in mind. The nature of the positions are different. And this is why, you know, the lack of polish for a Patrick Paul and the lack of polish or the perceived lack of polish for Chop Robinson, you know, they're not the same thing because, and Greg Cosell talks about this sometimes, but, you know, when it comes to the defensive end, the pass rusher, the edge rusher position, that is a home run hitting position. Okay. It is about home runs. If you don't have enough at bats to hit your home run, then you're not going to shine. If you haven't seen, you know, you're like, oh, I saw him matched up against, against so-and-so, you know, three or four times. And he didn't, you know, he didn't do the thing that you wanted him to see him do. You know, you have to keep that in mind with that position. It is a home run position in nature. On the other hand, Patrick Paul is playing a batting average position. Okay. It is not a home run position. It is not about your slug percentage. It is not about your home run, your cumulative home runs. It is a batting average position. It is about consistency. And the best ones have that, you know, unbelievable consistency to where they're doing well 97% of the time, something like that. And I think that that's the thing that we have to keep in mind about those two positions and those two players is that Chop Robinson, as Simon described, can shine as a rookie. If he gets in enough reps in there, to hit those home runs. But you know, Patrick Paul, if they're not thinking that he can raise his batting average, then this will be a red shirt for him in 2024, that you might not see him play any in this year. And I think that that's something to keep in mind.
I think that's preferable.
Yeah. I've got three quick questions for you, Alf, before we get out of here, because I'm aware time is against us. And you probably have to answer around the edges two or three of them. But the first one is, you know, we saw Tyler Smith come out of Tulsa as a left tackle, kick inside to left guard. Is there any possibility, given the probably the problematic start inside in terms of the guard position, that Paul might be looked at as a guard in the same way that Tyler Smith was?
No chance whatsoever.
Excellent. Question two is, are you seeing, and I know you're obviously not allowed to report this, but are you seeing, you know, we came into the season last year with the Chargers game and we saw all of a sudden the new motions, the, you know, the condensed, much more inside the numbers in terms of, you know, the condensing of the field in terms of how they were taking the offense forward. It was a question I asked Mike McDaniel, and we obviously played the clip out at the start of this, the new series of through IPC, but are you seeing any evidence of a change to the offense in terms of something that McDaniel's been in the laboratory and he's come up with something else that will help the offense pre-snap or to help get guys open? Because I know you won't be able to give that away, but is there a nuance that you're seeing that is new and is evolved from last year?
Absolutely. And I've mentioned it on our Discord, you know, when there's been live tweeting and you hear me say, hand off to Jonnu Smith. And then you hear me say, hand off to Jonnu Smith once again. That's a thing. They spent one practice. I counted it. They ran 18 out of 24 plays or run plays and were design run plays, I would say. Not the normal, I would say, outside zone stuff. So they've made an effort to, I guess, retool their run game. You've also seen me say in these practices that have been open to the public, where everybody could just say, you know, you could live tweet. You've heard me say deep post pattern to Devon Achane. And you've heard me say deep dig to Devon Achane. And you even heard me say go route to Jalen Wright. So yes, they've expanded what they wanted to do on offense. The problem is that the offense has been absolutely horrid for 6 days, except for one day. For that one day that Tua lit up the defense, which was evidently the day that he signed his contract.
So is that a Deebo Samuel-esque evolution in terms of, because we saw a tiny bit of it, didn't we, in game 3 last year with Eric Ezukanma taking snaps at running and indeed handoffs at running back. Is that something that we're seeing that harks back to those days with McDaniel controlling as the run game coordinator in San Francisco?
Yes. Devon Achane, they're finding ways to get the ball in Devon Achane's hands as many ways as you can so far. It also helps that Raheem Mostert doesn't practice. He'll take two or three snaps and he'll do the calisthenics part of training camp, but won't take any live action snaps.
Nice. And then final question would be that, we all questioned all off season really in terms of as soon as he got the gig. What's Anthony Weaver's deal in terms of how is the defense looking? And again, I know you can only tiptoe around the answers, but what is new? What is unique? What is blitzes? I saw Barry Jackson talking about a fair few blitzes and a lot of disguise blitzes, a lot of simulated blitzing. What's the deal? What's your vibe after 6 days in terms of what that defense is doing and how different it's going to be?
Well, I can't tell you precisely how many guys they were sending, but I would say that if they ran 60 snaps today, there were about 56 blitzes. Okay. So they were sending a lot of pressure today in a lot of different situations, and it was opening up things for a lot of people. Channing Tindall had 2 sacks today. Okay. So it was opening up things for a lot of different people. There's a lot of fronts that I kind of like in here. They're using a lot of different guys. Anthony Weaver's very, very involved. He's not a great overseer like Vic Fangio was last year. He's kind of hands-on. He does all the installs, which is something that's new to me. I don't remember. Usually I saw the defensive coordinator do the installs for Brian Flores, but he was always really hands-on, just like Mike McDaniels is hands-on with the offense. Anthony Weaver is like hands-on with every single unit as far as when they're doing their installs, and then they combine them all to do it together. It's pretty tricky. If you saw the Ravens last year and you saw those fronts and you saw those coverages, they're trying to emulate that. This defense is going to be much more like what Brian Flores coached here than what, and Nick Needham kind of said so when I did the interview with him, than what you saw with Vic Fangio. This is very, very aggressive defense that Anthony Weaver now, installed.
I want to ask you just like three very quick, they can be yes or no, are essentially one word answers. And that is about three players that you don't really hear much of. You haven't really heard much of in the past, or they come from humble beginnings or whatever you have you. Just a quick fact or fiction on them, because they're names that we're now hearing about camp. So give me fact or fiction. Fact or fiction, Ethan Bonner.
That's a fact. You see a go route, and Jalen Waddle's on that go route, and Tua's delivering a pretty good ball that's going to be on target. And at the catch point, Ethan Bonner is right on Waddle's hip, and he elevates to knock the ball away. That's a real play. That play translates to anything.
So, I knew Jason Sehorn was going to ask a question about Ethan Bonner.
He is a pretty noticeable athlete, man. He can move.
Moving on, fact or fiction, Quentin Bell.
I want to say fact for now until the big guys come in. But for now, he's doing his job. He's doing his job well. I want to see in the preseason. So incomplete. How about incomplete? But fact for now.
Okay. And the last one, because he got some, he got some play today, or he got some, made some plays. Fact or fiction, Channing Tindall. 2 sacks today, something like that.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead with fiction. Everybody was saying, is he turning the corner? I'm like, one practice is turning the corner. He's been here for how long already? So he has to stack more of these practices. Today, I think he was a beneficiary of the defenses that were called. He made the plays. I'm not going to take him away from him. Those are two confirmed sacks. Like, they called them on the field. Like, when the quarterback says, okay, I give up, and they blow the whistle, that's a sack. And, and he came in clean. But he was helped by the scheme, in my opinion. He has to stack more of them. He has to play well in the preseason. He has to earn his way for the regular season. And onto the team.
Nice.
That's
it.
That'll do it for me.
That's a wrap, everybody. If you want all of this information every week, or indeed every day, then join our Discord at OnlyFins. Alf is doing yeoman work pretty much every day, putting Chris and certainly me to shame. He's on there every single night updating people as to what's happened with live chats and all this sort of jazz. And I know for one, in fact, I know I speak for Chris as well, where he said we're very thankful to Alf for doing all that and for being at practice every single day to give you that sort of inside information. The three of us will be back next week, as per usual. We'll break down more of what's happened over the week in terms of the Dolphins, what's been happening in practice, how people have been looking, how people have been performing, that kind of fact or fiction, as Chris introduced there at the end, which is really nice. We'll do some more of that. But we will have all the information. We are literally your one-stop shop for Dolphins news and conversation. Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. We are Alf, Simon, and Chris, and we shall see you in a week's time.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.